Greetings for Ex Libris On Air. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title, Eternal Vigilance, Guarding Against the Predatory State. And my author joins me from Washington in the United States of America, former engineer and currently an author, Ralph L. Baer. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jay, and thank you for arranging the interview and giving me a chance to present my book.
Your book is, a lot of detail in it, and it does deal with a complex subject. One of the things that I noticed in there, you talk about predatory government or predatory things that are happening in the governance of not only this nation, but others. You have called them kleptocracies, if I can use that phrase. Share with my listeners a little of your book and how this got to be written.
Okay. I started writing the book when I became so concerned about the obvious dysfunctional behavior of our body politic. I was bewildered because the fiscal irresponsibility was so clear, the solution so seemingly manifest, yet we were not addressing them. If you just take a look at the numbers, they assault the mind. Mm. Our national debt is comparable to the whole GDP of a year of 20-some-odd trillion dollars.
Wow.
We have annual deficits in the trillions, and we have unfunded entitlements that are multiples of that. I would say that a likely scenario is that these national obligations simply can't be honored in the future unless with greatly inflated dollars. So in any event, I felt that I needed to dig into what was going on, take a look at some history, what other countries were doing, to see if there's some deeper phenomenon at work, maybe some first principles of human nature to determine what they were.
Have you always had an interest in the details of government? I know because of your engineering background, most engineers that I speak with are detailed people. Obviously, from your book of 342 pages, you fall into that at least initial category of having a passion for the weeds. If you get down in the weeds and look at stuff, you have a passion for analyzing and coming up with solutions. Is that a good way to describe your style?
Yeah, I don't think I would link it so much to my engineering background. I worked for 7 years with McKinsey & Company, which is an international management consulting firm, and most of that time I spent working on government contracts here in Washington.
Wow.
And I think that led more to these broader interests than my engineering background.
In looking at the United States from your perspective and having worked at least peripherally in government and dealing with those types of issues, kleptocracy.
You can skip the kleptocracy. That was actually a very small point of the book in one chapter. I was trying to describe the larger phenomenon of what I view as predation in government. And kleptocracies are a fairly small in number set of countries around the world right now, led by some autocrat or some oligopoly that milk the economy. But that's not the broader picture that I'm looking for.
Very good.
So let me back up for a second.
Sure thing.
On that, if I could, that I take a broad definition of what I think a predatory state is. I define it as where a state has a monopoly of coercive force in government, meaning the only one that can use force, and it uses it to extract wealth from all or part of the citizenry for the benefit of a ruling elite over some special interests or factions in government. So that's the broad definition I would use. And in discussing it, I start out with a couple of things. There's an economist by the name of Deepak Lal, and to quote from him, a universal feature of politics anywhere is the ubiquitous predatoriness of the state, and that occurs because of the monopoly of coercive power and because there are always self-interested parties trying to extract revenue from the people. Now, that's not actually a new observation, even though it's in modern terms. As I began to dig into these questions, you could go all the way back to Aristotle 2.5 millennia ago. And Aristotle observed that all forms of government, whether they're tyrannies, oligopolies, or pure democracies, have what he called perverse deviations that inevitably play out over time. And in the case of democracies, which are most germane to the United States and our own experience, it is the rule of the crowd for the benefit of the dominant majority and the detriment of society as a whole that constitutes predation and should be the focus of our concern. More recently, if you take a look at our Constitution and read Madison, particularly as he wrote in the Federalist Papers, he also was very concerned about this phenomenon of self-serving factions within representative governments. And that led to his view of things like checks and balances and a carefully balanced federal republic form of government.
Mr. Baer, this is a very complex issue that you are dealing with, and it's covered in 342 pages. Did it take a long time to assemble all this and get it into a form that you were comfortable with in sharing with the public?
I'm very sheepish to say it took me a long time. I've been working on the book for about 6 or 7 years.
It's not too bad.
Now, I had the first draft done in probably 2+ years in terms of getting the argument down and the main sources of information. But this book essentially represents 4 drafts, and each one took a year or two, each time more polished, I hope, and clearer for the reader.
That's beautiful. I have had some authors that have taken a lifetime, maybe 18, 20 years to complete either a novel or an idea or a concept and get it published. So I don't think 6 years is that much of a time frame, considering the subject material, for sure. Now, you've got footnotes and other documentation in your read as well. When you began to complete this, and I guess even when you started it, who was the audience you were wanting to reach? What are you hoping to achieve with it?
Well, obviously, I'm hoping to inform an audience that there are problems that I think are solvable if more people in the electorate understood the nature of the problems, particularly if they understood what has been done in other countries to deal with very similar circumstances. After all, we're dealing here with human nature, universal problems. They've been addressed in various ways around the world, and I think we can draw on that going forward.
Have you always had a passion for history?
Well, I have. This actually is my third book. My first book had the title Free People, Free Markets, Their Evolutionary Origins. And if you focus on the word evolutionary, I take a look at 2,000 years of history to show how we arrived at the basic values that underline our modern societies. So that first got me into history. But here I narrow my attention, obviously, to the problems that I think are most facing the country right now.
A lot of governments, or governance is the correct phrase, I believe, deals with good intentions. And there seems to be a lot of that in the United States Senate and some of the laws that have been passed. What is your observation of that?
Well, I think that is a universal thing, that politicians and representatives always couch their actions in terms of good intentions, and that's obviously what captures votes in the long run. And I guess I'm for good intentions as much as anybody else. The question is, how do you address those? How do you achieve them? And I argue strongly in my book, it's not just the good intention, but you need a strong empirical basis of what works and what doesn't work before you set out to achieve them.
That's absolutely a great viewpoint, for sure. You also, in Chapter 6, talk about cautionary examples of representative government. Is that dealing with primarily our government that we are familiar with, or is it a universal content?
That chapter is designed to be universal. The earlier chapters just get into more specifics about where I think we went wrong. But in that chapter, I show how there are numerous countries around the world that set down the exact same path. It's something that, as I mentioned before from Aristotle, is endemic to democracies. And I show how each one of about 6 or 8 countries tried the same thing in terms of good intentions and ran into problems as a result. The interesting thing is, if you go to the Chapter 7, a number of those countries, I think roughly 4 of them, saw the error of their ways when they hit fiscal brick walls and figured out ways to reform that were very effective. And I'm hoping that we can learn from their experience.
Is that your primary hope for this book and obviously your passion for correcting perhaps what you feel is a misdirection of choices by government?
Absolutely. To a certain extent, I argue that our experience has been a little tragic, in that I just think our U.S. Constitution, as originally ratified, was an awesome document. Mm-hmm. It built on a century of experience in the world to build in protections against the kind of behavior we've seen, and that basically over the last 100 years or so, we've undermined many of those protections, which have led to the problems that we have today. To a certain extent, I argue that what we need to do is to go back to our original constitutional principles, and in doing so, we can be informed by experience of others around the world.
Has anyone in the education arena read your book and felt it might fit nicely into a curricula of some type?
Well, I certainly hope that that occurs. The only example I have so far, if you look at the back cover, you'll see a quote from Philip Scribner, who's a retired professor of philosophy from American University.
Yes.
And he thinks it has an important role to play if we can get an audience for it.
A very important work that you've completed in this Eternal Vigilance, the title. Talking about we the people and guarding against the predatory state. You have outlined it beautifully, and again, it's 300 and some pages, so it must have taken a while. Besides the 6 years, were there other challenges that you faced in getting this to the marketplace?
Well, anyone that doesn't have a long history in the marketplace has to find an audience for the first time, and that's not easily. I've been working with my publisher, Ex Libris, who's come up with a number of ways to get the word out. In addition, I've got some close friends that are involved in these issues, that are involved in local radio stations and things like that.
Beautiful.
And I'm hoping to get the word out through those avenues as well.
Very good. Thank you for sharing your story today. The title of the book, again, is Eternal Vigilance. My author, Ralph Bayrer, spelled B-A-Y-R-E-R. Sir, my listeners need to get a copy of this. How do they do so?
They can get through Amazon, or they can get it through Ex Libris.
Very good. And if they do a search under your name, they will find this and other books that you've published. And is there anything else in the work for the near future?
No, right now my efforts are devoted to promoting this book.
Fabulous. Thank you, sir, for joining me today and sharing your story. For Ex Libris On Air, this is J. Douglas Barker.